So as ministers within your parish, this oneness between you, members of this priestly couple, really has a great impact on your effectiveness in your ministry. You also need to lean on that oneness between the two of you to protect the integrity of your ministry. Chrysostom says, and I'm sure all of you men have read on the priesthood. You know, and I look at you with awe, because I keep asking the question, who could be a priest? And when I see what goes on in the lives of priestly couples, I ask, who would want to be a priest? And yet, thank God, you've responded to that call. But it's infinitely demanding on you. And the eyes that watch you are constant. And that's why Chrysostom says, the priest ought to be protected on all sides by a kind of adamantine armor, by intense earnestness and perpetual watchfulness concerning his manner of life, lest someone discovering an exposed and neglected spot should inflict a deadly wound. You all know how the enemy seeks to undo everything that you seek to accomplish by the grace of God. You all know. And he will seek to exploit any little blindness, any little neglected spot, to tear down this beautiful building of oneness that God is building through you and your spouse. The truth is, there is no more adamantine armor, no better protection against these things than a godly spouse. That's the best. I mean, I'm not a priest. I have been a pastor, and I am involved in ministry. And I have learned, and I confess the hard way on a few occasions, how Satan can find those weak points and exploit them and impact your ministry in a negative way. I mean, even when you have tried with great earnestness and have thought you were perpetually being watchful, sometimes things slip by us. We don't see. But there is someone that does. That wonderful spouse God has given you to watch over you. I've had this beautiful experience for 35 years. I have a beloved wife who has never been afraid to come to me and say, Matthew, I just have to tell you this. Are you aware that you do this? Matthew, do you understand how people see it when you say that? Do you see how someone might be offended? And maybe legitimately so, by what you just did in that situation. She never does it to be critical. She always does it apologetically. And she lets me know that the only reason she does it is because she believes in me and the ministry God has given me. And in 35 years, she has saved me from such embarrassment and from offending people and from being misunderstood so many times. She's put me on the right track. It's made us a more effective couple in our ministry for Christ. And this is the gift and the grace that God gives to you in your priestly work. A spouse who can help protect you and assure that the devil finds no small place where he can drive his darts and wound your ministry. I mean, this is one of the ways that we truly experience the presence of God in our lives. Through a spouse who ministers his love, grace, and correction to us that we must embrace. We also have to lean on the oneness between us. You lean on the oneness between the two of you to be your healing when you get wounded. And there's no way around it. To be ministers of Christ is to get wounded. Bitterly, sometimes. I've always thought, I started to say ironic, but then I thought, no, the better word's paradox. Father Thomas Hopper talked about orthodoxy is paradoxy. Spiritual life is paradox. And one of the ones I've noticed is that it's those hearts like yours, just full of love for Christ, full of the of devotion for His work. He comes to you with this calling, and it grips your hearts, both of you. Father, I'm not finished. It grips your hearts. The only meaning that you can possibly see for your lives is to walk with Christ and to fulfill this ministry that He's called you to. You can't do anything else. You accept His call to be doctors in this great hospital called the church. It takes sensitive spirits and sensitive hearts to do that. What I'm saying is the paradox. The people it takes to do this job are the people who can be hurt the most. You roll up your sleeves and you go to work in your ministry and you find out Chrysostom's actually right. Absolutely. In this hospital where you work, as he says, the reception of the treatment depends on the will of the patient, not of him who applies the remedy. In other words, Chrysostom isn't God here. Sometimes the people you need to treat, that God wants you to treat, are very resistant. Sometimes they're more than resistance. Sometimes they're absolutely belligerent and resentful. And that's why he says, when he speaks of the priest, and by extension to the Matushka, all who surround him are ready to smite and overthrow him. Not enemies only and adversaries, but many even of those who profess friendship. Hurt and betrayal. All the love that you give and all the patience you administer, all the ways you pour yourself out. There are times when you're still going to be disdained, misunderstood, and treated unjustly. I have found it an interesting sort of aspect of this ministry God's given me now as I travel around to churches and speak. And I don't know how prepared I was for this, but I have found that most of the time, the trip from the airport to the parish is the time where I get to hear priests pouring out their hearts about the hurtful things that are going on in their parishes. So they know they have a sympathetic ear. And they know that probably, too, that I'm going to be gone, And they don't have to worry too much about what they say to me, but I hear it. I hear it over and over again. And that's why in one section of my prayer book, there is just, I have the priests, I'm going to have a job here, I guess, getting all the names, but the priests of the parishes that I visit are all in my prayer book. Because I have felt their pain. The pain of their sensitive ministering hearts. And I've watched priests' wives be treated even worse. I'm a very mild-mannered guy, I must confess. But if there's ever a time when something rises up in me that it just makes me like to grab someone by the collar and shake them, it's when I hear them disparaging a Matushka or a Presbytera or a I think of one particular instance whenever I think about this. I remember visiting a parish where Again, I don't know if, remember, if it was a Matush or a presbyter. What we got, all I know is that she was directing the choir with one hand, holding her baby in the other on her hip. And during the coffee hour, I overheard a conversation between people who were complaining about how she didn't pay enough attention and ride herd enough on the two older children during the service. That hurts. That hurts. So how do you keep from becoming bitter? You have to lean on one another's strength. You and your wife have to remind each other. This is the life we're called to. It has never been easy to be a minister of Christ. Let's read the New Testament. And what's St. Paul telling us when he says, being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we endure. Being defamed, we entreat. As ministers of Christ, that's your job description. But what company are you in? Consider your fellow laborers, who you are joined to in this work. I shed tears every time, you know, those Sundays of the year when we hear 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, read. Where St. Paul says, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews 5 times I received 40 stripes minus 1. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned, 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day I have been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside the other things which come upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches. There's no way around it. This way of ministry is the way of martyrdom. The requisites for ones are perfect humility and perfect self-denial. There's a way in which I suppose you as ministers called to this beautiful work that Christ has given you need to lean on one another to help one another remember that this we must rejoice in. This we must rejoice in. For it identifies us as true laborers in the vineyard of God. And if humility and self-denial is the ultimate desire of God for us, so that we can experience His life in oneness with each other, in oneness with Him, then somehow we should embrace those hurts. And we should be grateful for them. I mean, I don't have, like I say, a parish ministry, but in the ministry I do, I have been hurt. And I have come to lean upon a very beautiful, beautiful meditation. And many of you are probably familiar with this. St. Nikolai Velimirovich. It's a meditation from his precious book, Inner Circle. Familiar with that book? I actually copied it. Into the front of the book from where it is, but because I lean on it. And he says, bless my enemies, O Lord. Even I bless them and do not curse them. Enemies have driven me into your embrace more than friends have. Friends have bound me to earth. Enemies have loosed me from earth and have demolished all my aspirations in the world. Enemies have made me a stranger in worldly realms and an extraneous inhabitant of the world. Just as a hunted animal finds safer shelter than an unhunted animal, so have I, persecuted by enemies, found the safest sanctuary, having ensconced myself beneath your tabernacle, where neither friends nor enemies can slay my soul. Bless my enemies, O Lord, even I bless them, and do not curse them. They, rather than I, have confessed my sins before the world. Bless them and multiply them. Bless them and make them even more bitter against me, so that my fleeing to you may have no return. So that all hope in men may be scattered like cobwebs, so that absolute serenity may begin to reign in my soul. So that my heart may become the grave of my two evil twins, arrogance and anger. So that I might amass all my treasure in heaven. So that I may for once be free from self-deception which has entangled me in the dreadful web of illusory life. Enemies have taught me to know, but hardly anyone knows, that a person has no enemies in the world except himself. One hates his enemies only when he fails to realize that they are not enemies, but cruel friends. It is truly difficult for me to say who has done me more good and who has done me more evil in the world, friends or enemies. Therefore, bless, O Lord, both my friends and my enemies. Now, this is the blessing. To me, this is the special grace that God gives in particular to you as ministering couples in this holy church. This ability to be one in love with the people who struggle so hard not to be. And as the two of you mutually encourage each other to take up this cross, which is yours, you have the opportunity to find the love of Christ in a way most never do. The blessed Christ pours out his grace on you. He sees every hurt, and he is touched by it. There's a verse that has always been one of my favorite in the scriptures, and I very seldom hear anyone recite it. But I bet that many of you know it. It's from Psalm 56, or more correctly, 55, verse 8. You number my wanderings. Put my tears in your bottle. Are they not in your book? God takes your tears, especially those shed in the life of ministry. Puts them in the bottle. They are precious to him. But with all this talk about those who hurt us, those who hurt you in ministry, you have to remember that there are also those who love you with all their hearts, who do respond to your ministry, who do look at you as holy icons of oneness in Christ, who do seek to emulate your example, who do seek to follow your instruction. They see the light of Christ in you, and they feel his strength in you. You are precious. I say that from the bottom of my heart. If you don't hear it anywhere else today, or tomorrow, or next week, you are precious. The power of your ministry is the constancy, the intimacy, and the strength of your relationship with each other. And I pray you never take that for granted. And that you never give up. And that you're never afraid to devote yourself to what Christ is doing in your relationship with your spouse. Don't let that take a back seat to anything. Especially all those demands that seem to call constantly for immediate attention. Be one with each other. And one with Christ. And then together, teach. teach us.